Boston, Atlanta, and Brooklyn are finalizing a three-team trade that is going to send Kristaps Porzingis and a second-round pick to the Hawks. So Kristaps Porzingis is also gone. Terrence Mann and Atlanta's number 22 pick are going to the Nets. George's Niang and a second-rounder are coming back to the Celtics. The Celtics' Chris Forsberg apparently loved themselves some second-round picks because they now have about 47 of them, it feels like, over the course of this draft and the next. What do you make of this trade for Kristaps Porzingis?
Yeah, my first instinct was to start looking at the money. And so you've got a situation where Kristaps Porzingis was making nearly $30 million. George's Niang is at $8.5 million. You're going to save $22 million there. That gets you below the second apron. You are now able to unlock some of the restrictions. You maybe have the opportunity to entertain some of the big man that you want to bring back, either Al Horford or Luke Kornet. But again, I'm not sure this is the last domino. I've been told before this all started that once the dominoes start going, they're all going.
High noon! Jones and Keith here on WEEI. It's a Wednesday. And it's the return of Pure Hoops with Turp.
Yes.
Justin Turpin, Pure WEEI. Hoops. Check him out at Justin Turpin on Twitter. His coverage all over WEEI and the Odyssey app as well. Turp, what's up?
What's up? Nothing really to talk about, right?
No. You called it, though. You said this was going to happen soon.
Tried to warn us.
He tried to warn us.
Monday morning, he's like, yeah, guys, I know we're talking on Wednesday, but I think a lot of this stuff's going to go down before the draft. And we're like, yeah, Turp, whatever.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, boom, Jrue Holiday, late night trade, Porzingis last night. So they've been active. Let me catch you up to speed on the latest, if we can, Turp.
Maybe
we'll circle back.
Let's do it.
Windhorse says teams in the top 10 are lining up to make offers for Jaylen Brown and Derek White, though he believes ultimately both will remain with the Boston Celtics. Brett Siegel of Clutch Points.
Clutch Points.
Who looks young enough to be Terps' kid.
Yeah.
Like, this guy looks young.
Okay, young gun. Okay, well, I mean, good.
He looks
up
like,
and comer.
He looks like a young gun.
I like it.
He's hearing Jaylen Brown has been a hot name trending in trades around the league. The Utah Jazz, whose GM, president of basketball ops, whatever his title is Danny Ainge.
Yes.
Made an aggressive push in the last couple of days to try and acquire him. League sources tell Clutch Points. What's the likelihood Jaylen Brown is on the move, Utah or anywhere else?
I don't see it. I mean, I guess with Utah, with the fifth pick, obviously there's a Boston connection with two Ainges now in Utah, but I just don't see them moving off Jaylen Brown. I think for the most part, fans understood what was going on with the second apron, that they had to get under there for the restrictions, the penalties, whether or not you agree with it, that's a different story. But if you get under the second apron and then trade Jaylen Brown or Derek White, I think that's where you run out of your free pass, right? In a way, they have a pass to kind of maneuver the way they've done things and the way they've operated because people understand they have to do it. But this is a new ownership group coming in now. They've accomplished the goal that they wanted, and they're not done yet, right? They're only $4.5 million under. There are more moves to come, but you're going to run out of that pass if you turn around and trade Jaylen Brown or Derek White. Those are the guys that everyone kind of feels the feeling around is that they are going to build around them and Jason Tatum. And if you go off and offload one of them, that's how you really set a bad tone to the beginning of your ownership.
And I know this is a salary dump, like very clearly this is what they're doing, but I feel like it's a little bit different. So like, when you look at the Red Sox, Rafael Devers was having an all-star season.
Right.
Kristaps Porzingis played half a season and not in the playoffs. And then when he did play in the playoffs, he was tired after games. Like, I feel like, yeah, the return wasn't great for Porzingis, but you just couldn't rely on him. Like, I feel like a lot of fans probably feel the way I do, where you're like, all right, nice player. Thanks for the run on the title. But without Tatum next year, you need guys that are going to play and guys that you can rely on. So this sort of had to happen. Like, Porzingis being gone, like, okay, like, I don't think you're not losing the guy that you're like, oh, he could be 20 points per game and like 7 rebounds. Like, that guy's not really there. You can't rely on him.
I will say I am a little bit worried for what it means for the offense now, though, and the defense at that. I mean, when he was on the floor, he did give them an entire other element that took them to another level. I know it was sparingly. We actually looked
and
at
like
it this morning.
And like two playoff runs, couldn't even count on.
And I think the last one this year,
yeah.
I mean, when they needed him most, when
right.
they were going stagnant against New York, they went out and got Kristaps Porzingis for that reason, to get the offense back on track when that was happening, and he wasn't able to do it. So I think people did sour on him pretty quickly. And when it's all said and done, people will look back on his tenure here and be relatively happy, right? They won a championship. game one alone, I think, was worth it. Like, you come out right out of the gates, and he just punches Dallas in the mouth. It really felt like there was no recovering from that for Dallas. Like, they just, the Celtics right away flexed their muscles and said, we are a better team, and Kristaps Porzingis was right in the middle of that. But I do think people are a little bit upset, and rightfully so, about how, actually, I don't even think, I know people are upset about how he played in the playoffs this year. And but, you know, he did bring another element. Now you're kind of left, what are you going to do now when the offense slows down a little bit? Because he was, as much as he wasn't in the playoffs, for the time being that he was here, he was the guy that got them back on track. And that's why they went out and got him, right? Because they couldn't beat his own against Miami. They went out to a guy who's kind of matchup proof, and it worked for the most part, but it didn't at the end. But I am a little bit worried for what that means now. And the moves aren't done yet, so we'll see.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask you about. I don't like the Porzingis move. If I told fans yesterday all you were getting for Porzingis was Niang and a second-round pick, fans wouldn't have wanted to do that. Now, I understand the cap savings or getting under the second apron. I understand all that. They could have taken more money back and gotten a better return. They chose to prioritize savings. I don't like this one. I do like the Jrue Holiday trade, and I thought they did much better on that trade than I expected them to do. Keefe and I both like Anfernee Simons. Is he going to be here, or is he going to get flipped?
See, that's the issue, is if they hang on to him, he'd be the fourth highest paid player on the roster this year. And when you're just looking at it, right, if you're assuming his extension is going to be in the neighborhood of where he's at right now, it's going to be between $25 and $30 million per year. They just jumped off Jrue Holiday's salary that would be close to $30 million a year. So you're really not going to save much than what you were with Jrue Holiday. So I just feel it's going to be tough for them to extend him. So if you're looking towards the future, right, are you going to really want to hang on to Anfernee Simons? And I'm a big fan of his. I think he would be a great fit in the system, specifically offensively. And even defensively, I think being around better defenders in a scheme that has proven to work. I think what Joe Mazzulla has done with the defense is kind of overlooked. They finished second, and fourth in defensive rating since Joe Mazzulla has been here. So the defense has been good. So I think that would help him as well. But when you're just looking at the future, right, it's all about complementing this team when Jason Tatum gets back. What is the cupboard going to look like? What are the surrounding assets going to look like when Jason Tatum gets back? And is Anfernee Simons fitting in on that timeline, just given what his extension would cost? It's just kind of tough to justify it. So maybe they hang on to him and move him at the deadline. Teams are always looking for shooters, especially a guy that would be on an expiring deal. And he could really prove himself in this really, I mean, like, the Celtics are going to play fast this year, and he's going to fit in well. So we'll see. I just don't see him factoring into the future plans just because of the financial standpoint. Like, you just went under the second apron. The plan would not be to go right back into it.
So two, I guess, questions about as it relates to Simons. Obviously, Holiday's had the better career, but for the next 3 years, who do you think will be the better NBA player, Anfernee Simons or Jrue Holiday?
I would go Anfernee Simons, and if you factor in the contract as well, like that Jrue Holiday contract towards the end, when he's 38 and making like $30 million a year,
More.
That's going to look pretty tough. And we saw him drop off a little bit last year, too. The shooting efficiency, I mean, especially
that's
from
that's what I'm thinking. And my other point, though, on Simons would be, I agree with you, I don't know if he's somebody that you want to commit $25, $30 million to for multiple years. But knowing that you have 1 year without Tatum, which is 20 shots a game and 30 points a game, and the Eastern Conference is wide open, wouldn't you almost say, hey, we'll take this guy. He's kind of a mercenary. We'll take him for 1 year, and then we'll just let his contract expire, but we're gonna use his offense this year while Tatum's gone.
Yeah, I actually crunched some numbers on this just to kind of put it into perspective as well for Jason Tatum and what they're missing with him in the offense.
Sick bro.
I walked right into that one.
Nice.
26.8 points per game for Tatum last year. That was 23% of the team total. 20.3 shots, that was 22% of the team total, and he had 6.0 assists, that was 23% of the team total. So you're looking at like a quarter of the team total in points, shots, assists. Yeah. Like, you need to make that ground up somewhere.
I'm sorry, that's just Tatum. That's not even factoring in what you lost with Holiday, too.
Correct. That's just and Porzingis. Right. So you just think of all the ground that needs to be made up on the offense, and what you're getting in Anfernee Simons is a capable combo guard.
I think he's a great, like,
well,
1 year guy. Like, I don't need to have him. I don't need to commit multiple years to him. I'd use him for this year, see if you can get hot, have a good offense, maybe surprise the people in the East. Like, I think that's a good investment. It also is like you're not punting on the season. It's something there, and then let Brad figure out who he wants to commit to after the fact.
I just wonder if they want to get the kind of the roster that is going to be playing with Jason Tatum in line, especially if it's younger players, and just let them play. Like, if you're going to bring in younger players in the draft, free agency, whatever it may be, let those guys get the experience them play.
I would wholeheartedly disagree with that approach. And it's pure hoops, rather, with Terp, Justin Turpin, joining us here on WEEI, Jones and Keefe. I would just disagree with that. I would lean more towards where Keith is at, where I would try to win games this year. And, you know, the East is wide open. And I wouldn't just prioritize a youth movement and fitting the roster around Tatum, which I get is a long-term goal. But until I see the East have a significant hurdle there, the Knicks are beatable. Cleveland's beatable. Indiana's definitely beatable. I don't believe in Orlando. Detroit needs to add more. Those are the best teams in the East. I just listed them all. So they shouldn't just punt on this year to prioritize youth movement and getting kids out there.
I was
there.
Just saying that could be
no, no. An but so yes. I'm not arguing with you. I would argue with that approach. If that's what they do, I would hate it.
I would totally agree. Like, they should be going for it. You have two Supermax players on the roster. You have Derek White on the roster. Like, there is still talent on this team. And I know it's tough with Jason Tatum out. I mean, we're going to see how important he is. But you still have players around on this team that can win you games. And you said it, the East is wide open. I mean, hell, if you look at the sportsbook odds, they're still top five finish projected. So, like, yeah, they should absolutely go for it. And you don't know if Tatum's going to come back. Like, I think it's a risky game to assume, like, all right, he's trending forward. Like, let's assume, like, it's risky to play like he's, like, take it like he's going to come back. But it's also, you don't know. Like, he could be coming in. Like, you could be a 4 or 5 seed at the worst, mm-hmm. and Jason Tatum can be coming in and joining a playoff team. So you have to keep that into consideration as well.
Simons, Niang, better chance one is on the team this season versus the other? Like, are they both gone? Like, what's your guess?
I mean, I would lean Simons because I think he is a potential asset in the future. When you look at Niang, like, that was strictly a salary
that
dump,
really was.
And no one's arguing to the contrary. Like, everyone's like, wow, that was, people are shocked it was such a salary dump for Porzingis. Like, they're not married to that guy.
But it does kind of set you up, it does in a way set you up to for more flexibility long term. Like, those are two, like, NBA players. Simon's a starter, Niang's a bench guy. You could play them, and then their contracts are up after the year. And, like, I feel like they,
Niang's in your rotation, and Simons is a starter.
Like,
and
you could do that.
A top 100-ish player in the league.
Right, right. Like, I don't think that's terrible.
I wrote this for WEI.com, brag.
Yep, there you go,
brag.
The other day. The fact that they were able to get under the second apron and not give out any of their picks that they had and add two rotational players is a win for Brad Stevens. I mean, the reality is they were going to get worse. There was no way around that. You're already down a starter from the championship team Jason Tatum.
Well, you subtracted two starters to get two rotation. No, I get that. But I'm just saying, it's not a basketball win. It's a financial win.
Win. It's given the situation. But that's just kind of the nature of the league now in the CBA. Like, you have to look at that. You have to consider that. And I think people are overlooking the basketball penalties in this sense when you are retooling the roster. And you would have been doing it next year regardless, because were they going to hang on to Jrue Holiday the duration of that contract? They probably weren't. Like, that contract is not going to age well. Kristaps Porzingis was done next year.
Yeah.
It makes it really hard to build a new roster when you're so handicapped by these restrictions. So they did need to get out financially and for the basketball restrictions.
Maybe. They didn't have to do it today. They didn't have to do it now. They had until the trade deadline to sort that out. And my contention would be you could get that return for Porzingis, like a low-level contract, or even a better return. By waiting that out would be my contention, but it's a hard one to prove. Real quick, before we get some phone calls, and you can dial up Terp, any questions you have about tonight, about the Celtics this offseason, about moves to be made or moves they have made, 617-779-7937. We'll get there in a moment. You think Hauser moves tonight?
I think that would be one of the outcomes that are possible tonight. I would lean Hauser, Simons, or Niang, that if they are to make
anyone,
a move.
Any one of those three could be in play tonight.
I think so. I wouldn't say Derek White or Jaylen Brown, but I think any of those three would be in play.
Terp's been trying to warn us about a lot of stuff. So one more time. So not Brown, not White, but any one of Hauser, Simons, or Niang could be in play tonight. Now, is that for a roster move, or is that to move up like Bullpet was reporting?
Could be probably to move up. I think they're looking at the draft like, and this is another thing too, is like if you're going to be offloading guys, like, you want to get younger and you want to build through the draft, especially with what they're trying to do here. So, yeah, I think it could be for a draft pick and moving up tonight.
Okay. Let's get to some phone calls. 617-779-7937. Our pal Josh is in Nashville. Go ahead, Josh.
Jonesy Keith, this Terp guy. What up, fellas?
Hello, like, Josh.
This Terp
guy. Hello there. Terp guy. Yeah, I'm just kidding. I'm putting some respect on his name. Like,
appreciate
you know. But, yeah, like, Boston and the NBA, like, what are we doing with Jaylen Brown still in Boston? Like, I've been on this take for friggin' years, man. Like, the man does not know how to friggin' dribble a friggin' basketball. The most essential thing that a basketball player should know how to friggin' do. Get him the hell out of here. Get him to Utah. Get him out.
Oh, get him out. Get him out.
The guy is drunk.
I mean, what are we doing here? Friggin' get him
out
of here.
We're still doing this.
He's very aggressive. No. Listen, Jones and I also traded Jalen Brown for about 5 straight years.
I've stopped, though.
No. I am a reformed Jalen Brown trader.
Well, hang on. What about for Cooper Flagg?
Well, I'll do that.
What about for Giannis?
Well, I'll do that.
What about for Devin Booker?
I would do that as well.
You're not totally reformed.
No, but to Utah for the fifth pick?
No, I'm not doing that.
Or even San Antonio for the second pick, which had been a rumor for a while?
Uh-huh.
I'm not doing any of those.
Terp, you're a pure hoops guy, as is well known.
Yep.
Purist.
What is the fundamental skill of a bat? Is it dribbling, to use his parlance, a friggin' basketball?
I think that is a fair assessment. I would say so.
Even more so than shooting.
You can't really get on the court if you can't dribble.
Please talk to Kyle Korver. Yeah, guy. I never saw the guy dribble once, scored 71 points in a game without taking one dribble.
I mean, I guess shooting.
Reggie Miller come off a screen. Boom.
Oh, that's all
shooting.
You got.
Ray Allen. Ray Allen barely dribbled.
Yeah. Shooting would be. It depends on your position, I guess. It's all kind of relative. Case by case.
They're all good skills. Jack is in Worcester. What's up, Jack?
Hey, Josh sounds like he's hunched over somewhere at a bus stop in Dorchester. But anyway, I just was calling to wonder if Simons or Hauser plus a combination of picks is enough to move up to get whoever Stevens is targeting. I mean, we trust him, I'm sure, more than just about anybody in the league to target a guy and pick the correct player to get.
Hang on. Do we?
In the draft.
Trust Stevens?
Well, Stevens hasn't had a lot of opportunities in the draft.
Do we trust him to do that? That's what he's saying.
He just made his first round selection last year. We really don't know anything about it at the end of it.
Okay, but I'm not saying he can't. I'm not saying he can't do it. But I trust him more than anybody else to target a player and move up in the draft? No.
No, I wouldn't agree with that. I mean, we haven't seen it. We haven't seen it yet. And I don't know how much a Hauser and Simons get you into the top 10. I mean, teams are going to be calling to get in, and teams are also going to be looking to get back out. So there will be moves, but I just don't know if that's the deal that does it, especially with Simons on an expiring deal. I mean, we'll see how high up 28 and 32 can get you, but Hauser, that's a tradable contract and an asset that teams are always looking for. Teams are always looking for shooters. Guys are going to be making like $10 million a year over the next four. He's never shot below 40% from three in his career, so there's going to be some interest with him, and that's a player that teams can always be looking to add. Now, that's also one that you can move at the trade deadline, and you don't really have to worry about the injuries as much with Sam Hauser, right? For the most part, he's been pretty healthy. I know he dealt with a couple things last year with the back and the ankle, but for the most part, he's been pretty healthy, and you were telling me at a contending team at the deadline next year wouldn't be interested in Sam Hauser, you'd be lying, right? Because every team's always looking to upgrade as a shooter, especially a three-point shooter that's consistent like Sam Hauser. So, I mean, I could also see them hanging on to Sam Hauser for that reason, because there will be suitors for him at the deadline if they so choose.
Here's another way to save money. Trade 28 and go into the second round or take a future first, because you were telling me, Terp, some of the money, there are four or whatever below the second apron, even if they make the first
round
pick.
Right, so that's counting in the first
round. If they move that guaranteed money, there's savings right there, for precious savings for Bill Chisholm. What do you want him to do in the draft? Is there a name that you like or a player that you like, whether it's a move up, move back, stick and pick scenario? What do you want him to do?
I really would like to see them go with the big and kind of the Kristaps Porzingis archetype there. So I like Ryan Kalkbrenner from Creighton, which we got a tweet about earlier on the show account. I saw that one.
Yes, true.
I also like Maxime Renaud. From Stanford, another one that's a shooter, can space the floor.
We got a call about him yesterday, Keith. I'm like, who's the Stanford? I'm like, is he talking about the Lopez twins? Like, who's the Stanford kid he's talking
about? Madsen? Remember Mark Madsen?
He's a good Stanford player. I've seen him now in a couple of different, I think John Givony had him in a mock draft. Gary Parrish, who I like, had him in a mock draft. I've seen him linked to the Celtics a couple of times.
And this could mean nothing, but I think it is worth something just noting. Like, that last year when they drafted Baylor Shireman and Anton Watson last year, they were both older prospects. Both of these guys are older. Kalkbrenner was a fifth-year senior.
Jeez, dump that.
Again, sorry. And
Reno
was a senior as well.
Friggin' do. Get him now out of here.
So the guy that the Illinois guard that Steve Volpett mentioned.
Jakachonis,
thank you. He's projected to be like a top 10 pick, right?
Right.
So like if they were to go from 28, they'd have to go pretty high in order to get him. So, and also he's a freshman. So like if they go back to their, 4-year model, you're more likely to get that guy at 28 or whatever, 24. If you move up a few picks, package your high second round pick somewhere in there. But yeah, if they get into the top 10, like that's at least interesting. You know, it's something that like they're clearly targeting somebody there that they can bring in, and you would think would get good playing time.
It's near impossible to target anyone at 28, because whoever you're thinking about, Brooklyn's probably going to scoop up. They have five first-round picks.
If and then they have like an early second, not that that really matters, but just like in that group of picks, they have like six of like 12 picks.
They're essentially drafting a summer league team.
That's
five or six.
Seven or eight. Good call.
That's going to be the Thunder in a couple years, right? Yeah. Like, the Thunder have like every pick. Thunder and like, who's out? Is it the Jazz?
Thunder have two picks. The Nets. In this draft,
and they're looking to move up this year.
Yeah, Thunder
right
are already
now.
In the lottery, aren't they? I think they're already in the lottery.
Yeah.
And they just won the title. Mm-hmm. Now, look, 14 or wherever they're picking, how valuable is that? We can debate. But that's apparently where Brad Stevens is looking to move up to. I'm not telling you Brad can't do it, by the way. But he hasn't done it, which means there's other GMs I trust to target a guy and move up. But it'll be interesting on draft night. Any one of Hauser, Simons, or Niang could move tonight, Terp says.
Hmm.
And he wants, what's the name again, Terp? Who do you want again on draft night?
I'm going to have to get the beep ready if I say it again.
Yeah, okay. That, actually, we're not in the safe harbor. Don't say that again. We're already out of our dump button. Our dump allowance. Well, Terp, we appreciate the time. Pure Hoops, periodically in the offseason, every Wednesday during Celtics season. I will talk to you soon. Check out all his work at Justin Turpin on Twitter and all over WEEI as well. Thanks, Terp.
All right, guys.
Thank you, Terp.
All right, we'll get back to your phone call, 617-779-7937. More on the latest from the Celtics. Are they looking to move into the top 10 or teams in the top 10 calling about Jaylen Brown and Derek White? We'll do all that.
Them phone lines are ringing in Boston. My understanding is the Celtics are getting offers, calls on both Jaylen Brown and Derek White. The Celtics have high price thresholds for both players. We know how great Jaylen Brown and Derek White are. So I'm sure they're getting some massive offers, some pretty big time calls as well. Their preference has been to keep both players, but this is a team that's still in the first apron, still a luxury tax team, still dealing with the uncertainty of Jason Tatum's status next season. So at minimum, I expect Sam Hauser, Anthony Simons as names that will be discussed. Will a team match that price threshold that the Celtics, I'm told, have set around the league for Jaylen Brown and Derek White to be able to get them? They are listening, but will a team get there? Just in the span of the last 2 days, Scott, though, they've shed $180 million in luxury tax savings. They've gotten out of the second apron, but with a season next year full of uncertainty, just how much do they want to get out of these aprons and the taxes?
I was Shams Charania last night on with Scott Van Pelt discussing the moves the Celtics could make and the moves they don't necessarily want to make. We just talked to Terp, Pure Hoops, Justin Turpin. Check out his work, Justin M. Turpin. Follow him on Twitter there. And also at WEEI. You can hear the full interview on the Audacy app, AUDACY. Get it on your phone, free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go. Terp says Simons, Niang, each of whom they just got in return for Holiday and Porzingis, respectively, and also Sam Hauser. Any of those guys could be on the move tonight.
Yeah.
Shams says a lot of teams are calling about Jaylen Brown and Derek White. Celtics would need a massive offer. But teams are offering a lot. Windhorse says teams in the top 10 are making offers for Jaylen Brown and Derek White, though he believes ultimately they're going to remain Celtics. Perhaps Windhorse is hearing some of what Brett Siegel of, again, Clutch
Siegel
Points.
Siegel Beagle. Clutch
not,
Points.
Not to move in on Greg Hill Show territory, but caca.
Yeah, a little
with
bit.
With the seagull there.
That was a seagull.
Stealing little French fries of information.
It happens.
Again, this individual, Brett Siegel, looks young enough to be Terp's kid. But he has a couple of different items. One, that the Jazz are making an aggressive push for Jaylen Brown. They pick at five.
Makes sense. So Danny Ainge would want Jaylen Brown back.
The number five pick for Jaylen Brown.
No,
our guy Josh in New Hampshire is on board with that. Not me.
No, not me either.
Brett,
what about
Siegel?
Lauri Markkanen?
Brett
take him back.
Siegel is also hearing the Raptors offered the number nine pick for Derek White. Any interest there?
There's no interest there, but I think Derek White for a top 10 pick, if you really like the draft. I don't really love the draft that much. I think Cooper Flagg's a stud. There'll be somebody that emerges from that next group. And if Brad Stevens feels really strongly about that, I guess maybe at least like Jaylen Brown for one of those picks, I think you're insulted by it. But like Derek White fetching a pick in there and then whatever else, like that's somewhat intriguing, but I'm also saying no to that. Like, I'm keeping both of these guys. I think the way this offseason...
You and I both said no to a Desmond Bain, Mikal Bridges type of trade for Derek White.
Right.
So assuming it's just the number 10 pick.
Oh, just the number 10 pick.
And not like a raft of picks.
Right.
And even so, I get the value on a raft of picks, but I don't want that. I'd rather have Derek White. here this year trying to win and then still with Tatum a year from now.
But the issue with like the pile of picks is you don't even know where those are always going to be. Correct. Whereas like this year, no, but I'm saying if they give you like a top 10 pick this year, you at least know
I see. You
have a top 10 pick this year. So
yeah.
At least, you know, you think about it, but I'm keeping Brown and I'm keeping White. I think it was kind of inevitable that Porzingis and Holiday were going to be traded and probably Hauser. And so two of those three things have already happened. They're still keeping their top two guys as they wait for Tatum to return. So this is kind of what we thought, maybe just a little bit quicker than you and I thought it was going to be. The draft tonight, another opportunity for not only the Celtics, but a lot of teams to make a lot of different moves around the league. But I'm wondering if, like, what are Brad's basketball decisions that he has in store? Like, what... Right now, he's playing like banker, and he's like trying to figure out all the finances.
He did the best he could with the parameters that ownership set. I think he did really well on the Holiday trade. I think he did really poorly on the Porzingis.
I agree, but Terp had a good point about how I didn't know if you might have to throw in a pick for somebody to eat those contracts or whatever else, and like you didn't do that, so you still have all your stuff that if you want to maneuver.
Yes and no, I felt that way. I thought they would have to, especially on Holiday, sweeten the pot. I'm shocked they didn't have to give up a draft pick. If you did give up, call it a future first with Porzingis, could you have gotten more than Niang?
Yeah, maybe.
My guess is yes. So in that scenario, I don't really think he did well not involving the pick. I'd rather get a better return on Porzingis.
But then the tricky part is, if you throw in a pick and you get a good player, what is that player? $20 million?
Right.
And then where are you at?
So now between the two trades, you probably shaved off $10 million. You still got to move out. There are other ways to get below the luxury tax, though. You didn't have to do it with just these two trades. And again, I'll say it for the 50 billionth time, you didn't have to do it before the draft or before free agency or by opening night. You can do that in season by the trade deadline next year and dip below the luxury tax. None of this had to happen in real time.
So I think the risk you run.
But of course, Bill Chisholm doesn't want to pay any of these guys in the meantime.
No, he doesn't. He's trying to save money. That's clear. Get in line with the other owners in town, apparently. Right? Just like trying to save money.
That's the new hotness.
That is what they're doing.
Don't spend.
You shouldn't make excuses for it. But this is sort of Brad Stevens trying to figure this out. I think the biggest risk you might run to if you just rolled this team out is if Drew Holiday looked like he did a few years ago. If Kristaps Porzingis was healthy and the Eastern Conference is wide open, it's like,
fair.
Hey, guys, we got to keep this team together now. We still don't have Tatum. We're not even relying on Tatum. Although there'd be plenty of talks like, actually, he's actually ahead of schedule. And then they'd be like, now
crazy. You're trapped.
If you trade them when you're like the number one or two seed, people would revolt. Whereas you do it now, after a real downer, you lose in the second round, Tatum's already out, everybody's already talking about it. This is the easier way to do it.
No, that's true. But I guess my argument is, let's say you got a Simons-like return for Porzingis. Or maybe, I think you're a little worse this year without Holiday with Simons. I like Simons, but I do think Holiday probably helps you win more than Simons. But we'll see how all that plays out, if they even keep him. But if you got another deal like that, or maybe you got a little worse from Porzingis, but you save some money and it's a younger player who you can debate whether or not you want to trade. Well, now you have Simons and whoever that player is, and you could flip them at the deadline. There's a lot of options that you have. I don't like the return for Porzingis, even understanding the apron implications and all of this, which I mostly think are bullcrap. I'll disagree with Terp on that. I don't think those second apron restrictions are significant. I don't. I never have, and I don't. But they're not done. They have more moves they could make, and the Bulpet report, Steve Bulpet of the Boston Herald, or formerly of the Boston Herald, now at Heavy.com, reported the Celtics are trying to move up into the lottery to get Kasperis Jakaciunas, if I'm saying that anywhere near right.
Good pull.
Out of Illinois. So I do think that would be very interesting to evaluate and see how it goes. You know, I don't know that Brad Stevens can draft, never mind target a guy and move up and draft. We have no idea. I mean, I'm not saying he can't. I'm not telling you he can't. But we really don't know. That would be an interesting test case. If Brad said, I like this guy, I'm going to go get him, I'm going to move whatever it takes, future picks, future assets, Hauser, Simons, Niang, whatever, I'm going to move up because I think this is a really good player. I think he's going too late. I think he's a guy that we can grow with and would fit well with Tatum. I'm going to go get him. And that would be interesting. I don't need them to do that tonight. I'm not asking for them to do it tonight, but that would be an interesting thing to follow because Brad hasn't stuck his neck out there at all when it comes to the draft, at all.
Jakaciunas, according to The Ringer, a high-feel orchestrator and playmaker who will add rhythm and flow to whatever offense he joins. 13.5 points per game last year at Illinois as a freshman. Over 6 assists, which is a big number in college. 32.7% from 3. Although the Celtics have a history of taking guys under Danny that didn't shoot great in college and ended up, some of them being much better in the pros, others kind of staying the same, but that usually doesn't scare them away.
So,
and that's not a terrible number.
It's no, just, but I'm just saying, yeah. Like if Brad... I'm
no, but that's
saying,
going out there and like identifying a guy, moving way up in the
moving
draft.
Moving from 28 to the lottery?
Oh, that's big. I mean, last year they just waited. We thought they were going to trade out of the first round, and they didn't. And then it was the old stick and pick, Baylor Shireman. You're like, okay. Saw him a little bit in blowouts and that kind of thing.
If I had to guess, and this is no disrespectable Pet, who I think is very plugged in, if I had to guess, they're moving the other way. They're not moving up. They're moving out of the first round for more.
Yeah, and I'm sure he
for
heard
more savings.
And they might like this guy, I bet they but do. Like, how? What if he goes 7 overall? You'd be like, yeah, we liked him, but long gone.
Right.
7.
Yeah. So keep an eye on it. If he ends up having a good career, be like, hey, Brad liked him. It's like, okay, great. Couldn't get him, but he liked him.
Yeah, I would like a little bit of a track record of Brad drafting though, because really there isn't one to this point. That's not his fault. Juan Beguerin out of France, J.D. Davidson, who if you count G League stats, pretty good player.
G League player of the year.
Last year it was Shireman and Anton Watson.
Yeah, no, it's been kind of an incomplete. You can't say he's bad at drafting, but he certainly can't say he's good
but
at
you,
it.
You don't know. It's a literal incomplete. Yeah. You don't know. And I guess, you know, looking at the returns so far, I would question it. So we'll see how much he sticks his neck out there. My guess is, if anything, they move back because they don't want to guarantee money. 617-779-7937. That's your phone number to jump in line. Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. We'll get back to the Red Sox coming up at 1 o'clock. We got Grab Bag and Clip du Jour for you. And on the way next, Mike Giardi threw out an interesting possible solution for the Patriots wide receiver room. It's a name you've heard before, Keefe. It's a name I know you like.
Mm.
Let's get to it next.
If the Patriots are an 8-9, 9-8 football team and are picking somewhere between 16th and 21 or 22,
they talk themselves into,
hey, we'll give up the 18th pick for AJ Brown and think you can get like 2 or 3 really elite years because him, Vrabel, the whole thing. Yeah, that's a conversation that, well, I'm sure. Look, I know at some point during the year he's going to do something that we're going to have to talk about and say, like, are they at a breaking point with him? Because that's just generally that's that position.
Mike Giardi keeping the AJ Brown dream alive, Keith.
Okay.
Not this offseason.
Oh.
But
at some point down the road,
if they have a competitive year, if, and we think they will, I got him for 9. You
I
got
do.
Him for 10. No adjustments there, right?
Not yet. Nope. So I'm locked in there still at 10.
He was even lower than that. He's like, they win 7 or 8 games. They're just a competitive team.
Okay.
At some point, he's going to do something that pisses the Eagles off, and all Mike right. Vrabel's going to come calling.
I believe that could happen.
So it's a long-term dream of A.J. Brown that he's fanning the flames on. I just think it's more of the same, where the Patriots are desperately trying to find receivers, whether it was early on in free agency, Chris Godwin, where they were calling around on some of the receivers that got traded, whether it was even up to this offseason before Rashad Bateman signed his extension with the Ravens, they were calling about him. They're in on A.J. Brown. They know their receiver room is nowhere good enough, and I guess it's commendable they're trying to make moves, but when are they going to pull the trigger on that as opposed to, you know, bargain shopping for Steph Diggs coming off a busted ACL?
I know. It is. It is an age coming off ACL Steph Diggs, and that's still the best wide receiver acquisition they've had in several years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like A.J. Brown was kind of the dream, especially with the Mike Vrabel connection. But just the way the whole thing unfolded and, you know, Philly winning the Super Bowl, it seems like that has sort of put that to bed. I mean, if they get him in another year or two, like, all right, good. Like, I guess, like, Drake May's going to need somebody. And yeah. We're assuming it's still Drake May, so that's fine.
And if you want to be on the Josh Allen timeline,
yeah.
Allen got Diggs,
year
a different vintage of
two,
Diggs.
No, 3.
Year 3.
Yeah,
and
year
so
3.
You would be on that timeline.
So if it's that, then so be it. I mean, they really, really need somebody like Kyle Williams to hit. Like, eventually they need a guy like that that you sort of grow with, and then you have that player, then you make the decision to hopefully commit to him, and then rather than like the Titans trading away an AJ Brown, you just re-sign him and you keep that player.
I asked you this yesterday, but audiences change all the time.
All
Ethan,
the
radio.
Time.
Would you wager on Kyle Williams hitting as a Patriots draft?
I wouldn't. Okay. I would not bet on that.
Right.
I would not bet on that, even with free money.
I'm not ruling it out, but
no.
I'm not even popping down a bonus bet on that.
But of all the young receivers that they have on the team, meaning everybody outside of Diggs, Bourne, and Hollins, I would say he has the best chance to be good. And I only say that because he's the only one I haven't seen.
fair.
Don't you think? Like, if you were like, who's going to have the best NFL career?
Jalen Polk and Javon Baker. Polk, and guys
Baker,
like that.
Even Booty and Douglas.
Yeah,
I'd be like, all right, I think I kind of know what they are or could be. Like, Williams, I don't really know, so I'll pick him out of the bunch.
Speaking of bets.
Mookie?
Nope.
No.
No, if you want to Mount Rushmore your bets, we can do that coming up. Bet Online came out with all these various odds for the elimination stage for each NFL team.
Yeah.
So, like, for instance, the Patriots to win the Super Bowl plus 6,600.
Cha-ching!
Buying opportunity?
Sucker's bet.
Okay.
Probably sucker's bet.
To lose in the Super Bowl plus 6,000.
What? How about that being your bet? I'm betting on them to lose the Super Bowl.
But they're not going
to
win.
They're going to make it. They're going to get all the way there, but for an extra plus 600, no. So then you're like rooting like hell for them to lose the Super Bowl?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a fun bet.
They're going to get rocked like they did against the Bears, but that's the precise scenario I'm wagering on. Losing the conference championship plus 1,800.
Okay.
Losing the divisional round plus 700. Losing the wild card plus 300.
That seems like a buying opportunity.
Here's the headline, though, I think. To miss the postseason, it is heavy juice, minus 175, that they will miss the playoffs and not make it all together.
Which is odd because
they're favored in a bunch of games.
Right.
The over-under is 8.5. Last I checked.
They're favored in 11 games, but clearly the odds makers say, all right, setting the win totals, they got them right at 8.5. And I guess 9 is not a guarantee of making the playoffs, so that's why they probably have to weigh it.
Cincinnati a year ago, right. So that's fair.
But if they get to 9, it's going to come down to probably tiebreaker. I feel like 10 you're in, right? It's those very strange years where you win 10 and don't make it. 9 probably comes down to a tiebreaker of some sort. So to put them at minus 175 to miss the playoffs, I feel like that's a terrible bet. There's no juice, and I think they make it.
Yeah, plus 300 might be something, though.
Yeah, plus they're losing the wild card round, like again, in 21.
For Bet Online, we're saying don't bet plus 6,000 they're going to get to the Super Bowl and lose it.
What's the fun in that?
Don't do that.
No, that's a terrible bet.
Meanwhile, the other thing that came out today, and I listened to this morning, I didn't think there was much there, but it has picked up a little steam on social media.
The guy about the greasy pole? You're talking about that?
No.
That picked up some steam this morning. Guy called in with Greg and was like, knock it off.
Hey,
Shime's not going to be on
that.
Not
happening. Which, by the way, if I were Shime, I'd be like, thank God I don't
You're
have
like,
to go
phew.
On. Thank God I don't have to run on that.
That is a reckless injury waiting to happen.
Perhaps break something, and worst case scenario, kill myself. That's a good thing to avoid by Shime. Kraft was on the Schefter podcast. It came out this morning. They recorded it at the Fanatics Fan Fest.
Oh my God, that's that thing.
Because if it came out today, Kraft may have to answer for his fellow owners and them all colluding against players and not wanting to guarantee them contracts. No, this came out at FanFest where they did the interview in front of a live audience. Kraft, to me, sounded every bit his age when I listened to this.
All right.
Schefter also made a big point of making sure that everyone knew that Kraft wanted to refer to him as RKK. He wasn't being disrespectful by calling him RKK in the interview.
I know him that way where I can do that. I can call him by
his
initials.
He wanted to make sure that Kraft demanded he was called RKK in the interview.
All right.
But there were two things that jumped out. One, I feel like I've heard Robert say before, these last 2 years were the worst of his ownership tenure, which I feel like I've heard that.
Also, just look at the record. Kind of could assume that it was.
Just math
it's
really is
pretty
all that
much
is.
The worst two-season stretch that you've had. So
correct.
That makes sense.
You got to call me RKK. Hey. Okay.
Yeah, that's what, that's what you have to do. I will not answer to anything else.
All right.
But the most interesting thing I thought, and I did see Reese quote tweet this, is he was asked about the Lakers sale for $10 billion. And he went into a big story about how he knew Jerry Buss, and he thinks Jeannie Buss is doing a great job, and blah, blah, blah. He did say he thinks that not only will Patriots ownership go through his lifetime, but last through his children as well. So it doesn't sound like he is in this boat where we were surmising maybe John Henry was, or clearly Irv Grosbeck was. Who knows with Jeremy Jacobs. He's not at a point where he's looking at those numbers ticking up, 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 and going, whoa, $10 billion. Maybe we'll sell this
Let's
thing.
Do that. No, I think he loves it.
They'll sell percentages of the team. They'll sell 5%, 10% chunks, maybe to Sovereign Wealth, for all I know. But they're not going to sell the full stake in the team.
Kind of what I think we all were led to believe. And, you know, everybody will say that Jonathan's already doing so much and has been doing so much for many years that I don't think they're all of a sudden just going to remove it from the family. I think it's going to stay there for a while. Also, the way things are going, I'd probably rather own, it's kind of obvious, an NFL team over any of these other leagues.
Yeah.
Based on sort of like the money structure and everything else.
I'll tell you, a buddy of mine in finance, Bragg.
Oh.
Showed me a tweet the other week.
Oh, I thought he was going to say he showed me some graphs.
No.
Charts.
Jerry Buss, if he would have just invested, if he would have just invested whatever he put into the Lakers, I forgot what he purchased the Lakers for in 1979. If he would have just put that money on the S&P 500, he would have made way more money on that than owning a professional sports franchise.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's
how. You got to get it in for the love of the game.
I don't know if that's how it works for, you know, a professional football franchise. Like, those make money hand over fist versus an NBA team. But that would have been a good way to make a little more money than investing in the
Lakers.
There you go. 617-779-7937. You can jump in here on Jones and Keefe. We'll get back to the Red Sox coming up. Another wasted start for Garrett Crochet. Maybe a contract extension in the works for Alex Bregman, or maybe he'll opt out. Who knows? Plus another terrible loss last night. We'll get to it next.